Thank you for tuning in to this message from Kingdom Heirs International, headquarters located in Flagstaff, Arizona.
I feel sort of repetitive when I say, like, we're excited to have Megan tonight. I feel like we could just say that several times over, but it really is, just like it is such a privilege week after week after week to have Mom and Dad's voice and the wisdom that they carry and that they represent. So too is it an honor when we have what's been multiplied from them in Megan, when we have access to that and when she so willingly does the same thing that they've done repeatedly. I wanted to kind of like piggyback or continue off of things that both Brian and both Gabe said. When Brian, you're saying from the hosting standpoint, you're emphasizing wisdom that our family has. We remember that we've been taught, or it's been said before, right? Wisdom is a being, right? Wisdom is a tangible thing that we can experience, that we can engage with. It's not just this idea or this thing that's out there, but that it is absolutely something that is to be engaged. So too is that wisdom multiplied in what we have to engage tonight by way of the word that's going to be released and taught into, but also in the wisdom that's represented in the seat that's before us right now. And so I want us to be like thinking about that in a multifaceted way, that it's not just a concept, but that it's something tangible to engage. I am very eager, very excited, very anxious, nervous, all in good ways, for all that tonight is going to bring forth. And I wanted to just sort of connect some dots to where we've been in some ways and just continue to set a platform for tonight. So hopefully I can accomplish that. But just to remind us of words that have been spoken up to this point and to reemphasize, right, we know that we are not civilians. Right. Everybody remembers that teaching, that word. That this concept that we're not just people who are kind of whimsically or frivolously, unintentionally walking around by our own impulses and just kind of meandering through life, meandering through the wilderness, but that we are people that are set apart and called and marked by service. And we are living by way of serving unto something greater. And it's because of that that we're not in a civilian state or in a civilian mindset, right? I wanted to share a cool an analogy that hopefully we can maybe take as just a I guess just an analogy, maybe to kind of add to the importance of the teaching, but maybe just a way to further illustrate kind of what we're engaged in. There's a tool that the military uses when you're planning large-scale operations all the way down to like small unit tactics. And that tool that they use is this template that pretty much outlines in multiple bullet points basically the who, the what, the when, the where, and the why behind a mission. And that item or that document is called an operations order. They'll condense it and they'll call it an op order. One of the critical key components of an operations order is a paragraph that's titled the commander's intent. So you have the who, the what, the when, the where, the why. You have all these details that go into an operations order. But when we talk about the readiness ratio and the teaching that comes on a Shabbat, on this set apart time that we have to gather together that Yahweh has obvious intentions for, this is our chance to, like it was said last week when Dad was teaching and the week prior to that, that it's like we're in a briefing room, that we're getting like a mission brief. There's this key time that we have right now to hear and receive and own the commander's intent. When we talk about Yahweh as the strategist, and when we're coming from that revelation that we're his tacticians, we're the doers, we're the boots on the ground, we're the ones who are meant to carry forward the operation that he outlines by way of giving us his commander's intent. And so I want us to just be thinking about that again, just extending where we've been from this frivolous civilian mindset into understanding what he's calling us to in the purpose of a lifestyle marked by service that another key component of that that we have the opportunity to grab hold of is that commander's intent. And I believe that the commander's intent in another way is going to be revealed tonight in this teaching. And it's going to give us direction and the ability to continue to move forward. Additionally, with last week, to kind of just continue to connect dots, one of the things that was highlighted was we're learning to govern our cravings, right? We talked about some of the dynamics that those who were in the wilderness experienced. They had cravings of cravings. They had a desire for something that was outside of what Yahweh intended for them. They craved something that was not of Him. And as we're learning to govern our cravings, the other component of that, if I could just sort of like dice that up or dissect it a little bit, that everything we consume is for a purpose. Talk about manna literally representing the perfect nutrition source to sustain a large group of people as they went through the wilderness, right? Well, as we're governing our cravings, we're also realizing that there's an intent and a purpose to everything we consume, which again just goes back to the teaching that comes on these set apart times, everything that's going to be sent to us for us to receive by way of the intent that comes from tonight. But hopefully I'm sure we're already identifying this, but just to kind of put further verbiage to it, that because what we consume is for a purpose, that means that you have to do something with it. Does that make sense? Like it's super simple, but I think sometimes, speaking personally, sometimes I can take a thing that has purpose and I can consume it and I can miss the action on the other side. But think about in every way that we can, all the way down to the literal examples of the food we eat, right? It was highlighted in last week's teaching and in the week prior, of course. And over throughout the years, there's intention and purpose behind what we consume. But if I consume what He intends for me and I get good fuel in my body, the purpose for that is to be able to have the energy and the sustenance to do something. It's not just to enjoy it and to be indulgent in it, right? Because we can even twist that and be indulgent in the things that he has set apart for us to consume and miss the action or miss the doing, right? So hopefully we're able to really just be mindful of that full dynamic and bringing that full circle, that there's purpose in what we consume, and what we consume, because it has purpose, is meant to propel us forward in action. And that action is going to be us taking that commander's intent, the intention behind tonight, the teaching that comes, and walk every bit of that out. So as Yahweh is becoming more and more revealed to us, and we're understanding our position relative to Him and what that looks like, let's be aware of the tactics that come tonight, the techniques He reveals for us to be able to walk out His instructions, the procedures that He has for us to grab hold of and implement in our lives, so that we can continue to take everything that we have to consume and put it to the purpose that it was intended for.
All right. Thank you guys for opening us up tonight. All right. It's already been set out for us, so we're just going to kind of dive in. Jay was talking about part of what was released last week, cravings. Do you remember what Dad released is the, not necessarily the direct opposite, but he said cravings versus something. Do you remember what it was? Cravings versus contentment. We're gonna dive in a little bit more, or build off of last week, because you can see the connection from last week to this week, where we have grumbling and then we have slander. Okay, we don't have two separate stories. We don't have a case of grumbling and then a separate issue of slander or accusation, which we're going to get into. But there's a movement that's taking place just like we're moving, just as the people were moving, things were moving through the people.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about what happens from grumbling to slander, and Yahweh's intention for tonight is to continue to develop our character. Mm-hmm. And in the further development of our character, that we would get to a place where movement is never hindered because of our own self-sabotage or self-satisfaction, which we're going to talk about more too. Okay? So we're going to go back through a couple of things that are in this portion, but they're also things that have been taught on before. So we're not going to go through line by line and dissect every word from a teaching perspective, but we're going to go back through some specific things that I think will give context for the aspects of the portion that Yahweh is going to speak to tonight. Okay? Okay. So first, we have roles and responsibilities. I just want to remind us of what we've already learned about roles and responsibilities, because part of what we have here is a questioning of someone's personal value or worth or their role by bringing accusation to someone else's. Okay? So in Numbers 3 and 4, when we did our Torah portion studies and teachings, we talked about the specific duties. Does everyone remember? Let's refamiliarize ourselves for just a minute. Those are the portions where there's a census that's taken, but this census is taken so that there's an understanding of each tribe and each family within the tribe of Levi and who it is that's going to be moving different things as the tabernacle becomes mobile. And who's going to be responsible for what? We even have positioning as far as the camp and who's going to sleep where. There's so much that speaks to, I need you here. I need you here. This is your responsibility. This is your task. And what does Yahweh say when those things or those responsibilities are mishandled? Going back to that portion, do we remember the result? Yes. Yes. It was death. It was cutting off a generation if things were mishandled.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right. So just to remind us, so we have context going into this, order and instruction is given to preserve your life or the lives of others. These are just notes from that portion. Part of that understanding that comes, or that submission that comes in that order and instruction, has to do with your sonship perspective and whether or not you are viewing it from the perspective of a son in relation to Yahweh, a father, versus taskmaster or Pharaoh and slavery. Okay? All right. Okay, the other thing I want us to review is the Torah portion in Leviticus 13 and 14, which has to do with skin disease. Because we've got both of these in this portion. And like I said, I'm not going to teach on them in detail because we've already gone through them. Which, isn't it amazing to be able to go through scripture and actually understand?
Yeah.
what you're receiving now, because it's built on so much else that you understand.
Yeah.
And when you kind of pick and choose what you consume,
yeah.
The result of that.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. All right. So in those chapters, it talked about skin disease. It talked about kind of the part of what was taught on was The specific skin disease that we're talking about is not leprosy like we know it, and it was considered more of a supernatural response or reaction. Okay? And we didn't really dive into, is this literal sin manifesting? But really the focus was more on sickness itself or anything like that is an element of death being brought into the world because of sin. Mm-hmm. Right? And if it's about life and death, even in the purification process, when there is any form of separation, whether it's physical, because that's still a form of being separated from him, because it is a result of sin entering the world, which is not supposed to be, and that causes natural separation from him, regardless, it's about what's pure and what's impure, and sickness points to death.
Yeah.
Okay? All right, just like sin does. Another thing that we talked about is the effect that it can have on others. Do you guys remember any of that? Yes, I just want to make sure that we have enough context to be able to move into this portion. So are we starting to remember? Yeah? Okay, I genuinely want to know when I ask. Okay, so affecting others was a big part of the teaching, especially because Yahweh was addressing how if there is a physical manifestation of something, right, separation, whether it's literal sin or not, there are some teachings that would that say that it's you see it affect people, the specific skin disease, you see it affect people when there's slander, you see it affect people when there's gossip, or accusation or things like that. But regardless, that manifestation can affect others, which is what Dad just said when he was talking about the outskirts.
Yeah.
Right? The outskirts in you or the 15% in you can lead to sin in others.
Yeah.
The outskirts, even that we're unaware of, which is when the portion of skin disease was taught on, one of the things we talked about was the effects of your sin are never personal. Even if they're hidden. Meaning, that doesn't mean that it's not personal in that it doesn't affect you as well, but you can't confine the effects of your sin to just yourself.
Yeah, right.
Even if it's hidden, that doesn't mean that it's not spreading. That doesn't mean that it's not affecting the things that it touches, that it rubs up against, the fabrics that it shares, just like the skin disease. Our disobedience, our rebellion, this was a word from that portion, I'm quoting it, even your pace affects those who are called to walk with you.
Yes.
Who examined the conditions of the skin and specified what the treatment or the course of action would be? The priests. Okay. All right, so we know some were sent to the outside of the camp, right? Some were sent outside the camp. Depending on the details. The details really seemed to matter in that portion. They would look at color. It would depend on all kinds of texture. The way that they described the different skin diseases all had a different kind of walking out process.
Yeah.
But they all were identified and treated by the priests themselves, which we recognize is a representation of Yeshua. Okay. That was Leviticus 13 and 14, if I didn't say that. So when you're going back through these notes, it'll help you to familiarize yourself with all of those teachings. Okay. Are we ready to move on? Okay. All right. So we have some dissatisfaction going on in this portion. Okay? We had some dissatisfaction going on in the last portion. So the last portion, the people are dissatisfied with Yahweh. Right? Okay. There's accusation out of what could look a certain way, like hunger, and I'm being specific about that because Yahweh is going to make a distinction tonight between a craving and being hungry. Okay. So there was dissatisfaction in Yahweh or towards Yahweh, accusation out of that dissatisfaction that needs weren't being met. This week, there's accusation towards Moshe. There's a dissatisfaction with the leader, the mediator, that representative of Yeshua. All right. So there's a couple things that were taught on last week that I want to dive into more because it has to do with this issue of what satisfies us. So we're going to talk through self-satisfaction versus self-governance and cravings versus contentment. Those were taken from last week, so we should be familiar with them already. But going a little bit deeper, self-satisfaction just means that you're satisfied within yourself. Okay? That's kind of my definition of it based on my personal conviction in walking out last week's word. The actual definition of self-satisfied or self-satisfaction is it's a feeling or a showing, often smug or complacent satisfaction with oneself that can make a person think nothing better is possible. A smug satisfaction with oneself. So basically, to be self-satisfied means that you dismiss being satisfied by Him.
Yeah.
Okay. Then we have self-governance. Self-governance is, we're learning what it looks like to govern, right? So we're talking about governing ourselves. When Dad said, you can either operate in self-satisfaction or in self-governance, what he means by self-governance is to have control or influence over literally yourself. So it's developing self-control as you allow Him to direct you. I'm going to say that one more time because that's a really, really good, helpful definition for what we're all walking out.
Yeah.
Okay? Because there's a transaction that's taking place in you right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
In you all week long.
Yeah. Yeah.
In you every moment of every day that He's released this over you, that it's time for you to no longer be satisfied within yourself, but develop some self-control.
Yeah.
So that He can rule over and direct you.
Yeah.
And what it takes for Him to direct you is your personal self-control.
Yeah.
Just like when you're a little kid, and the thing that keeps you from following the very, very, very good and loving instructions that your parents give you is your self-control.
Yeah.
That's literally the only thing that's keeping them from walking in a way that will bless them.
Yeah.
Is their own self-control. That is you. Okay? Okay. All right. So self-satisfaction and self-governance. Then we've got cravings. Cravings and contentment. This has everything to do with tonight, which is why we're taking more time in it from last week. Okay, so cravings are an intense desire, this feeling of need or longing for something. Now, what's interesting about a craving is that it has so many different roots in your life. A craving isn't just food. It absolutely manifests in food, and that's probably how we use that term the most often. I'm craving this.
Yeah.
I'm craving all of a sudden. I might not necessarily even be hungry, but all of a sudden I'm craving sugar, or I'm craving chocolate, or I'm craving, maybe your cravings are a burger, or whatever that is, but it's like, it's just this intense, it's like you can smell it, you can, right?
Yeah.
Am I the only one that's how a craving looks? Okay, where it's like I literally can taste it in my mouth, I can smell it, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to have this.
Yeah.
Okay, it doesn't just have to do with food. It can be anything that you desire intensely, but what I was saying is interesting about it is that it's caused in you by some sort of a stimuli. Okay? An actual craving, I'm going to go a little mom on us, an actual craving scientifically has to do with hormonal fluctuations, stress, certain environments, and memories. It is not the same as hunger. Okay? Yes. Which part? Which part?
Just your definition.
Of cravings?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. An intense desire, a feeling of need or longing for something caused by a variety of stimuli. It can include hormonal fluctuations, stress, certain environments, and memories. And it is not the same as hunger. Okay, we're going to stop there for just a second. The portions over the last 2 weeks, what did we see the people crave? Meat. What else? They were talking about cucumbers. Right? I'm sure people identified with meat more. Probably like, yeah, definitely the meat. Okay, so if we take our definition or our understanding of a craving, that it is caused by a variety of stimuli, imagine, like how hard is it for us to imagine? Imagine leaving a system or leaving an environment that you were built up in and that you became accustomed or used to the way that that system operated, even the way that that system fed you. And as you leave that system, there are things that you begin to be stimulated by: memories, environment, stress. Is it stressful leaving a system? Okay. Is it stressful wandering through the wilderness?
Okay.
Being tested? Yes. Okay. And so cravings began to develop, where what then was dismissed was the absolute full provision of Yahweh meeting all of their needs, to the degree that before they even left, Yahweh made it clear and known how provided for they would be.
Yeah.
You will be in need of nothing.
Yeah.
You will lack nothing. My presence will never, never depart from you. everything, including their physical food, would be provided for.
Yeah.
And cravings come. And they confuse it for hunger. Okay. Back into where we are now. With this definition of cravings, if you give in to cravings, you are being governed by self, not governing yourself. That's why Dad put those two together.
Yeah. Can you say that again?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So this is how they're all connected. Self-governance, we haven't gotten to contentment yet, but all of how they're all connected, those four things that Dad taught on last week. If you give in to cravings, those desires or those feelings of need that are caused by various stimuli, if you give in to them, you are being governed by self. Meaning you are being ruled over, you are being controlled. Instead of self-control or self-governance, you are being controlled. You are not being controlled by what you're giving a craving over to.
Yeah.
Let's make that distinction, because I have a tendency to minimize things when I have a craving.
Yeah.
Do you guys do that?
Yes.
Okay. Because I'm looking at what I'm craving.
Yeah, right.
I'm not looking at the source of my craving.
Yeah.
Mm. I'm not trying to discern in a moment what I find my satisfaction from. I'm just thinking, this is just whatever. Right?
Yeah.
But if I understand a craving as an environment or a memory or whatever it is that I'm allowing to control me,
yeah,
I'm going to get a little fired up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At least that's how I feel.
Yeah.
Is I'm going to get a little angry. I'm going to get irritated because I don't like being controlled by something that I know isn't him.
Yeah.
If Yahweh wants to direct me, if Yahweh wants to rule over me, I will lay down and learn how to come under. But if there's something that is of this world that I recognize is beginning to have control over me, that's scary.
Yeah.
So we have to learn how to govern ourselves. Okay? All right. Now a huge, huge, I guess, it's not really a tool. It's a lifestyle change in our mindset and in the way that we function is contentment. And contentment is simply satisfaction. It's being satisfied without wanting more. All right, so that was self-satisfaction versus self-governance and cravings versus contentment. We're going to go, as we move through, I'm going to talk about contentment more, because there are some tools that Yahweh wants to give us on what does it look like to live a life where we are fully satisfied in Him and we can be purely content in whatever circumstance we're in or life that we would be a content people. Okay. All right. Are we good?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so how does grumbling lead to slander? We're going to move into that a little bit. You're going to hear a lot of the same kinds of words because that's just what you're always teaching. So what's interesting while we're talking about being satisfied or not, being discontent or content, grumbling means to mutter in discontent. So last week, when there's grumbling, there's a muttering. Does anyone do that? I've heard almost all of you do that. So the answer is yes. To mutter in discontent, right? So that's what's happening. It wasn't this like necessarily this loud revolt, right? It seldom is in that kind of way where it's just this blatant, like blatant rebellion, super loud, hostile takeover, but it is this like, right? We hear it from kids a lot, but we also hear it from the kid in us when we're like, you know, kicking our feet, stomping our feet. Okay. So if grumbling, we have to follow this all the way back because we want to understand how did we get to Miriam and Aaron, who are Moshe's siblings and leaders out of Egypt, how did we get to a place where there's grumbling in the outskirts to those individuals challenging Moshe?
Yeah.
That's why I'm breaking it down, because this is my personal process in following something all the way back so that I don't repeat history. And we're just doing it together.
Yeah.
Okay? All right, so we know where we are tonight, but how we got there was this grumbling. All right, so to mutter in discontent, discontent then is just a lack of satisfaction. But specifically, discontent means lack of satisfaction with one's possessions, status, or situation. Which literally leads to our portion. Lack of satisfaction with one's possessions, status, or situation. It's the same thing that happened last week. So while we're using different terms and the actual like way that it manifests looks different, it's coming from the same sort of place.
Yeah.
There is a dissatisfaction, and we have to figure out what is it that keeps me dissatisfied when I know I should be content because I trust that he fully satisfies.
Yeah.
So what is my issue?
Yeah. That's good.
It's not his. If he is full and it's all yours, then the discontentment is in you.
Yeah. Amen.
It is not traceable back to a God of lack.
Right.
Okay, so I'm going to read the first two verses. Then Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses on account of the Cushite woman he married. Because he had married a Cushite woman, they asked, "Has Adonai spoken only through Moses? Hasn't he also spoken through us?" Okay, so now we hear the true nature of the accusation. All right, so this is totally fake. Okay, which is really important for us to recognize because we are totally fake. Okay, when an accusation comes in my mind towards Yahweh or towards who he's appointed over me, I'm thinking, well, I don't know if that's right. Or I don't know I'm trying to think of like how it might look or how it might sound to you. But the reality of the accusation here, has Adonai spoken only through Moses? Hasn't he also spoken through us? So the true nature of the accusation is jealousy, selfish ambition. We've talked about every single one of these things. When Yahweh has told us he wanted to safeguard us from ourselves, he said, "I'm safeguarding you from jealousy. I'm safeguarding you from selfish ambition. I'm safeguarding," which is personal gain. We remember the teaching on selfish ambition. Was that bait? I don't remember. Anyway, from personal gain and It is driven by pride and envy. I'm going to say all of those things one more time. The true nature of this accusation is jealousy, selfish ambition, which is your personal gain, pride and envy. Okay. So now that we understand the accusation, and we know it's not just, I don't know if who he married is honoring of Yahweh. Did Yahweh seem concerned with who he married?
No.
Thank you, Tyler. Okay. So, Miriam is struggling. So that makes me want to understand, who is Miriam? I want to know, because I'm Miriam. Right? When you read the word, this is something we learned early on as followers of the way. When we read the word, we put ourselves in the word. You are not always Moshe. Okay? That's who we want to identify with. And so we're like, oh my gosh, all these grumbling people against me. Okay? I'm going to tell you pretty boldly tonight, you are not Moshe. I am not Moshe. Okay? We're Miriam. Because Yahweh wants to refine our character. And that's where we're at. Okay? All right. So, when we talk about who Miriam is, I want you to identify with Miriam personally. Because there are some things that Yahweh wants to bring conviction and beautiful connotation to. And he wants to free you from believing that that's all that you are at the same time. Okay? So it's not a condemning word. It's one that's going to call out the fullness of who we are. Okay, so Miriam's name, her root, the root word for her name, there's a couple, so I'm going to get into kind of a handful of definitions. Obviously, I'm a definition person. I'm like, so the definition of this. And then I read two more words, and then I had to know the definition of those. I didn't bring all of them, just a handful. But the root word is Merim, which means bitter. And when you study her name, when you study people's interpretations of her name, it's interesting because the perspectives on why she was given that name are all across the board. And there's a word in that. So, bitter could reference the bitterness of slavery that she was born into. It also could reference the bitterness that came out under the pressure of walking out of Egypt, and that we see displayed here, bitterness towards Moshe. There's some more definitions. Miriam, as in like Mary and Am, means defiance or rebellion. Mar Yam means bitter sea. And then it also, if you take Mar Yam as the verbal root, it means a changing, transforming sea. Okay, so understanding some of the definitions of her name, what were her roles? So one of her first roles that we see in Scripture as Moshe's sister, in Exodus 2, she rebels. But who does she rebel against? Pharaoh. Right? She rebels against Pharaoh. There's a decree, and she has a huge role to play in saving his life. And in bringing her mother, his mother, to be able to continue to raise him in a way, in secret, without her, that would not have taken place.
Yeah.
And then we see her rebel against Moshe.
Okay? So, her name, Rebellion. She rebels against Pharaoh. She's a catalyst for Moshe's entire narrative. And she rebels against him later. She's a prophetess in scripture. One of the first that they name, that they call a prophetess. That's in Exodus 15. And in Micah 6:4, it addresses the role that she plays alongside Aaron and Moshe in leading the people out of Egypt. It says, "When I brought you up from the land of Egypt and redeemed you from the house of bondage," this word, this is Yahweh pleading to his people to remember. By the way, Micah 6. "When I brought you up from the land of Egypt and redeemed you from the house of bondage, I sent before you Moses, Aaron, and Miriam." So we know that Yahweh called her to be a part of leading his people. Okay. So, with her being kind of all over the place, who does that sound like? Not me. Is she a rebel in the sense of threatening the future of his people? Like, this portion, this is threatening the future. When you bring accusation against the one who Yahweh has appointed to lead his people, that's a serious threat. Yes?
Yeah.
Do we see that as a serious threat?
Yeah.
Okay. Or is she a faithful daughter? Her obedience shaped the story of redemption. Okay. So the connection in all of this, as far as I see it, is that question that we ask ourselves, who am I? She's got a name that defines her, but she is all of those things. Right?
Yeah.
It's all dependent on her. It's all dependent on you if you carry awareness of your cravings. If you're aware of the tendency you have to turn to something else and what it is that you turn to. What else satisfies you? Those are things we have to learn to govern. And there are things we have to learn how to have self-control in. And I really believe that in these portions, what Yahweh is releasing over our house is in order to do those things, we have to learn how to be content. So you being either a rebel who threatens the future of his people, or you being a faithful son and daughter whose obedience will shape his story of redemption, is dependent on your awareness of your cravings, learning and identifying what you turn to outside of him that satisfies you, how to govern them, and ultimately how to be content. Okay. So we're going to get into contentment more. All right. So if we are content, we are satisfied regardless of circumstance. The circumstance here in this portion is that Moshe is the one. Moshe is the one who's chosen. He's the one who gets to meet Yahweh, meet with him face to face. He's the one who leads the people. Okay, that's the circumstance. I'm not implying anything about that circumstance. I'm just stating that's what's going on. Okay, one thing about contentment before we go further is, and part of this is because I don't want our thoughts to get lost. And a lot of times when a word is released, what will happen is we'll start to defend the word that's being confronted in us, like already. Does that happen to people? Okay. All right, so if that's happening, there's a couple things that I want to make sure you're not excusing yourself in. Contentment is not the same, or not to be confused with, carelessness or complacency. I feel like there is a worldly definition, or I don't know, context, or even like lifestyle that has to do with content.
Yeah.
Like I'm just content. That doesn't bother me. This doesn't bother me. I don't need this. I don't really.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's one aspect of content where it's just like, it's kind of like a lack of ambition maybe, or a lack of concern and care.
Yeah.
No need to be diligent, no need to be, decisive or even functional. I'm just good. That's not the same. At the same time, content also is the opposite of being self-satisfied, right? So it's not that you are, because there's another, if you were to look up finding contentment, or being, you know what I mean? Like if you were to look that up, there are also worldly definitions on the other side of the spectrum where we've got like, you know, kind of a carelessness over here that I'm just content. You know, I'm content with it. I have no ambition. I'm just good with whatever. And then on the other end of the spectrum, we've got like arrogance in the sense of complacency, where I am fully, we mix that up too. Complacency really is that I am self-satisfied. It's like I am overly satisfied with where I am, so I don't need to grow. I don't need more. Which is confusing, because when we say we're satisfied in Him, we are saying I don't need more, but it's the source. That's the difference. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I'm not talking about carelessness. I'm not talking about complacency. I'm not talking about dismissiveness or passivity. Okay. I'm talking about being satisfied in Him regardless of your circumstance. All right. So if we're content in Him, there's got to be something that keeps us from being able to stay in a place where we are satisfied. Right? Like, I want to know what keeps me in a place of discontentment if I know at the same time that He has provided all that I need. And that even my circumstance is under His authority. So how do I reconcile those in my actual life? How do I function out of a place of being truly satisfied in Him? In Philippians, there's a... Oh my goodness. We're bringing out some oldies but goodies that are going to have new meaning for us for sure. Okay? Because Philippians 4 talks about the secret of contentment. Do we know that? We know that. But I don't think I've heard it that way. Okay. So the secret of contentment. I'm just going to read. Well, first of all, who is writing this? Where is he?
Yeah.
Okay. The secret of contentment. I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at last you have revived your concern for me, though you were concerned before but lacked opportunity to show it. I'm not saying this because I'm in need. For whatever circumstance I am in, I have learned to be content. I know what it is to live with humble means, and I know what it is to live in prosperity. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of contentment, both to be filled and to go hungry, to have abundance and to suffer need. I can do all things through Messiah who strengthens me, who's only heard that verse without the additional context. Okay. More context. Before he speaks to his contentment or testifies to his contentment, he's speaking to rejoicing. He says, rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say rejoice. And he goes into what we know, do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, which is gratitude. Let your requests be made known to God, and the shalom of God, which surpasses all understanding. This is outside of your understanding, meaning this is outside of your understanding in the flesh. Okay? It doesn't make sense for someone to rejoice from prison. It doesn't make sense for someone in a poor circumstance to be fully content. Just like it might not always make sense for you under the circumstance that you're in to be fully satisfied as you move through the wilderness of testing and trial, where you don't have access to the things that you did before, and you're getting triggered in your memories, and you're getting triggered or stimulated in the things that you once knew, and you feel like you are hungry when it's a lie, and in reality you're just having a craving because it's associated with what you knew. And he's fully providing and he's fully satisfying you in every single way, that we have to learn how to find contentment in that. Okay, so this secret kind of remains a secret in a sense, because he never actually says, this is what it is. He's not like, the secret is. He just testifies. That's all. That's all he does. But in his testifying, in the midst of the condition that he's under, to how fully satisfying the Lord is, he's rejoicing. Okay, so what keeps us from that place? There's four things that we're going to talk about. One is a lack, none of them are new. One of them is literally from last week. It's that simple. The first is lack of sonship. Again, this is all stuff we know. If you are outside of sonship, your life is circumstance-based. If you are outside of sonship, if you do not know your identity as a son, your life is circumstance-based, because he still has to prove himself to you. Again and again and again, every circumstance is telling you something about him. And you have a right then, depending on your circumstance, to define his character and accuse him. Going back to that demand to prove, that's why I'm saying this is simple and none of it is new. We're walking out a deepening of sonship, and what's been released over this house is that there are light bulbs going off. It's clear. I'm telling you tonight, this is clear. It's easy. It's simple. You just have to apply it. Okay, so lack of sonship, circumstance-based, demand to prove, accusation versus coming under. Do you remember when we talked about that? When you are still operating as a slave, when you are faced with a circumstance, your response, instead of coming under the circumstance, is to fight it with accusation.
we kind of get going on some like daddy issues, some issues with the father.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. When we have an issue with the father, part of what we've been taught to do is to take it up with the son. I'm not saying that that's necessarily a bad thing, because Yahweh did say, take it up with my son because he is me.
Yeah.
But outside of sonship, we will use the son to take it up with the father.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's pretty hard to rejoice in all circumstance when you are using circumstances to prove to you how he sees or feels about you.
Yeah.
Or to prove that you're a son at all. Well, if you really loved me, you wouldn't have. If you really loved me, you would. Whatever it might be. Right? Or maybe you're just not good, but the son is, so I'll take it up with him, causing division in the house.
Yeah.
When the son says, I only do
what
my father does.
Right.
You got an issue with him, you've got an issue with me. Okay. So once we allow sonship to fully take root in our lives, and we are walking as sons, it will become natural for us to simply be satisfied in him, because you no longer are demanding his proof, and you know truly that in all things, right? In all things, in every circumstance, it is for good. Whatever. Okay. I mean, we're just going back to the basics so that we can really walk some things out, so that we can move.
Yeah.
Okay? So these are really basic. The second one is just a lack of understanding. So when we're talking about why we can't be satisfied fully in him, why that is so hard for us, we've got a lack of sonship that contributes to that, and a lack of understanding. What I mean by a lack of understanding is everything that Yahweh asked us to put back on the table, his character and his promises. If I don't understand who he is or have a true picture of how he operates, it is harder for me to have not only satisfaction in him, which again means despite circumstance, be fully satisfied, right? Let alone things like faith that's unwavering, hope, joy, right? Which comes with all that we're talking about, comes with being satisfied. So we've got his character, but then also because we are walking out religion, in religion we were cut off from the fullness of his promises. Right? There were promises that we still were meant to remember that we were told don't matter anymore. So we can be more familiar with things like in my life, what I've shared with you guys, like death, than I am with a promise of a fullness of life.
Yeah.
Literally, life now. right? So it's this unfamiliarity with both his character and his promises that can cause us to struggle staying content, mm-hmm. staying satisfied. Okay. The third is a lack of gratitude. All right. I can't wait till I fully understand how to be grateful. Because when we desire more and more and more, and I don't just mean, I'm not talking about earthly things. I mean, yes, that's an aspect of what I mean, and it does come from the same place of what we find satisfaction in, like what truly we find satisfaction in. Because when we seek to find satisfaction in worldly things, I mean, we can say that we know in scripture what that produces, but we don't, but do we really? Do we really understand? But what I'm really talking about is remembrance. That a constant desire for more causes you to forget what he's already done. Which is enough. And when we're told that it's okay to forget what he's done, certainly makes it harder. Which is part of why Yahweh has been saying, remember. Remember. The feasts are a time to remember and to prepare. So the constant desire for more causes us to forget what has already been done. We see it here, we see it in us, where there's extreme provision, there's the miraculous, there's deliverance, there's redemption, and then shortly after, like literally the blink of an eye, there is accusation and there is discontentment. Okay. Number four is from last week. And it's dismissing adversity and calling it bondage. So just to remind us, these four points are coming from us asking ourselves, self-reflecting out of this portion, what is it that causes me to be in a continuous state of discontent? When I know at some level, it might not be here yet, but I know at some level that I can be fully satisfied in him. Lack of sonship, lack of understanding, lack of gratitude, and dismissing adversity and calling it bondage. Let me tell you why. When we just read Philippians, what we don't want to ignore is, let me find the wording. What we don't want to ignore is that Paul says, I have learned. I have learned to be content. Whatever circumstance I am in, I have learned. We don't allow Yahweh to teach us. Because we're too busy. That's not the best way to describe it. We're not too busy. We are so reactionary when it comes to adversity, because of a lack of sonship, because of a lack of understanding, because of a lack of gratitude, that we don't allow our adversity to teach us something. And we call it bondage, and we put his name on it, and we say, take this away!
Right. Yeah.
Or we accuse him and say, well, you wouldn't do this.
Yeah.
So I'm not talking to you anymore. right?
Yeah.
Or however you say it. However it's worked out in you, if we dismiss circumstance as an opportunity to teach us something or to allow him to teach us something in it, we never develop the ability. Talk about entitlement. That's entitlement.
Yeah.
We don't ever develop the ability to be content because you're not allowing your circumstances to sharpen you. You're not allowing circumstance or trial or hardship to be something that he uses to shape you. We have a hard time of allowing discipleship to shape us.
Yes?
Yeah. Like, it's okay. It's okay to say that. I have a hard time letting discipleship shape me, and it's in the context of the safety of this family.
Yeah.
Let alone the circumstances of the world or sickness or disease or surgeries. Like, I can testify to some things in the sense of hardship when it comes to getting to a place where I'm not boasting. I'm literally trying to say that I have struggled in calling adversity bondage instead of immediately running and saying, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm scared, but will you teach me something?
Yeah.
Or I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed. I'm full of shame. I'm whatever it is that your adversity looks like, I'm stuck.
Yeah.
I literally can't stop. Whatever it looks like that then we were like, this is bondage. Just get it off of me. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to deal with it. Just get it off of me. And in all circumstances, he wants to teach you something so that you can learn how under and through any circumstance, through all of those things, that you can be fully satisfied. Even when it feels like loss, even when it literally is loss, even when it literally is death, even when it literally is suffering and hardship or whatever it might be. We have to allow him to teach us. And for us, I mean, talk about what we have to be grateful for. Teaching us. Like in the safety of this house, where you don't even have to navigate those circumstances by yourself.
Yeah.
I don't know what it would be like to come under him in circumstance outside of this house. I don't know. I don't know what that would look like. I don't know what the outcome would be in my life. But we'll still dismiss it. All right. So, the secret of contentment, rejoicing in the Lord always. Oh, one thing about rejoicing, which one day we'll get there. It's not a suggestion. You guys know that. Like it's not in the word, it's not a suggestion. Like it's a command. So, a little added pressure, a little added pressure in our attitudes or in our mindsets is that rejoicing always comes from being fully satisfied in Him, which if we're going to develop the ability to do so, we have to be thoroughly deepened in sonship. We have to grow in our understanding of His character and of His promises. We have to become more familiar with those than we are with the old system. We have to let go of the constant desire for more, which is displaced by gratitude. And we have to stop dismissing adversity and calling it bondage. Then we'll get to a place where we can rejoice always, which means we're obedient, because it's not a suggestion, but it's something we don't know how to do. Okay. Let me have a drink. All right, we're going to talk a little bit about His character, if we haven't already felt enough of it. But I want to make sure that we walk away from this portion with those light bulbs going off and that clarity as to who He is.
Yeah.
Because one of the ways that we just identified, one of the things that keeps us from being able to rejoice always, is a lack of understanding. So let's do the work to understand, right? Let's do the work to understand who He is. Do you look for what's revealed about His character in every portion? Is that starting to stand out to you, or are you starting to recognize Him more? I've heard from some people in the house just testifying to, as they walk out sonship, that they are just now being able to recognize the false father's voice and His. That's powerful, because it means that our hearts are turning to the reality of who He is. And we're starting to know the difference, because there's always going to be an opportunity for you to be falsely fathered.
Yeah.
Always. And He's easy to find.
Yeah.
It's not like... it's not like that voice is just like, I'm just going to dial it down because whatever, right? You have to be more familiar. That's the same concept of, you have to be more familiar with His promises than with the old system that you were walked out of. You have to be more familiar with His voice, and it is your responsibility. He is fully revealing Himself to you. It is your responsibility to receive that. Right? Okay. So His character revealed in this portion. Moshe, who represents Yeshua as a mediator, what is the position that he immediately takes in response to what happens to Miriam?
Intercession.
Is there any time lost where he's like, she deserves it?
No.
Or, yeah, that's what she gets. Or, rectify me, or... vindicate me, or it's immediate intercession. Okay. You're not him still. Okay?
Yeah.
So, you're still Miriam. It's important that you're still Miriam. It's important that you're still Miriam when he reveals himself to you, and when Moshe, in response to your jealousy and to your accusation, when his immediate response to you is intercession. That's his character.
Maybe I want to read that. Where did it go?
Okay, I'm going to read this. All right, you are Miriam. Okay? Adonai's anger burned against them and he left them. When the cloud lifted up from above the tent, behold, Miriam had Zerah, like snow. As Aaron turned toward her, behold, she had Zerah. He said to Moses, please, my Lord, don't hold against us the sin we have committed so foolishly. Don't let her be like a stillborn baby who comes from his mother's womb with his flesh half eaten away. So Moses cried to Adonai, saying, oh God, heal her now. So that's Moshe as Yeshua and the mediator. All right, Yahweh's character continuing to be revealed. What is Miriam's positioning? What is she directed in? Where does she go? Outside the camp. Okay. Do you remember all the teachings on outside the camp? And when his character was revealed, because we're like, that's so unfair.
Yeah.
Remember when we had to confront that?
Yes.
Now it seems a little like, okay. Yeah. But at the time, it was like, isolation? Mm-hmm. Cut off? Separation? Mm-hmm. We're going to go back to that a little bit. But she's outside the camp. This is a time of movement. They're moving through the wilderness. What do the people do? They wait. Okay. The people did not move on. Now, you could say, well, that's the character of the people.
Yeah.
What loyal people after God punished her. It's so nice of them to wait, even though she was punished by a wrathful God. Who were they following? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The cloud.
Yes.
Okay. So, did the people decide that they were going to disobey the cloud? And the cloud moved on?
No.
I didn't read that. Okay. So, the instruction was, do not move. Outside of me. Do not move until I say.
Yeah.
You will know it is time to move when the cloud moves.
Yes.
The cloud will go before you and you will stay under it. Mm-hmm. So what I'm understanding then is if the people did not move on until she was brought back, neither did the cloud.
Yes.
His presence did not lift. I don't know what it means for her to be outside the camp in regards to the cloud or the presence, but what I do know is that she was a part of the people because in scripture it says, did I not give you Moses and Aaron and Miriam? And in her sin, she's positioned outside the camp and he chooses not to lift his presence. Mm-hmm. We won't move on without her. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you're still Miriam, and you're a part of Kingdom Heirs. Okay. Your outskirts delay movement. We're talking about his character, and he asked or directed the people, probably didn't ask, He directed the people to wait, but they had to wait. I also don't want us so focused on, oh, they waited. Mm-hmm. They were moving and they had to wait.
Yes.
There was delay. That delay was good and right because his presence directed it, mm-hmm. but there was a delay. And yet, the grace of a community to wait. The grace of his people to wait. Mm-hmm. Has anyone waited for you?
Yes.
I'm going to say it one more time. Has anyone waited for you?
Yes.
Don't forget. Don't forget. Are people still waiting? Don't forget. Okay. One more. One more. Miriam challenges Moshe, and what she's challenging is his role, right? Okay. When we challenge a role, this goes back to the portions on roles and responsibilities, we're questioning our own. This isn't about Moshe, it's about Miriam. Okay. When we challenge a role, we're questioning our own as well as our identity, which has everything to do with our value. Saying that to give some context to the revelation of his character in what happens. This is another perspective on what happens when Miriam is given, I know I don't know how to say that word. I just say Zerah. So, like Tzatziki. Even though they're two completely different cultures and languages. Okay. So in her challenging Moses' role, she's given the same experience of who Yahweh is in how Moshe received him. So we can look at it as a punishment, but she's also bringing accusation to a role and what happened at one point in Moshe's life when Yahweh was calling him to lead his people. What was he given? Remember? Yeah. Does that not make sense? So when Yahweh was calling Moshe into his role, he was wrestling through belief or through unbelief. And to reveal himself to Moshe, so part of Miriam's frustration and her accusation and her jealousy is this is Moshe who gets to be face to face with Yahweh. And she's saying, well, I hear from him too. I might not get to be face. I mean, I'm taking some liberties here as far as what I imagine could be going on in her heart. I hear from him too. I'm a prophetess. I've been asked to lead these people alongside him. Right? And then she is punished. But there's another perspective that we could have. Because, and it's both in the sense of, is this what you want? Meaning coming face to face and experiencing him, she experienced him. But Moshe, whose calling she was jealous of, experienced him in the same way in his unbelief.
Yeah.
So part of what I see in his character in this expression is that she's given the same experience as the one whose role she was challenging. And in that, her perspective, which I don't know what it was, could be both. But even in her challenging that role, she experiences something that Moshe had to experience.
Yeah.
Now, he wasn't sent outside the camp or anything like that, but it's interesting to me that out of this accusation and challenge of his role, that she experiences the very interaction or exchange with him that Moshe did when he questioned his. And we see that as proof, but we see hers as punishment.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at people who look confused. Do I need to talk about that more? Does that make sense? I feel like because we're still working out his character, that there are some things that he does that we're like, nah, that's punishment. And at the same time, I'm not saying that it isn't a consequence. But if what we're trying to receive from him in this word is that in all circumstances we can be content, then could we find something other than punishment in what she just experienced? And his presence never left. So, in my mind, I struggle to see consequence. At the same time, I understand that it is, but it's not.
Yeah.
Like at all. Because she just experienced him.
Yeah.
She literally got to be faced
yeah.
with.
Right. Yes.
So what circumstances, what experiences, what things have you dismissed
yeah.
as bondage when they were literally him responding to your cry?
Yeah.
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 Or whether he produced that circumstance. I'm not getting all, let's not.
Yeah, you're good.
I'm not saying. All, what I'm trying to say is that regardless of where that circumstance came from, regardless, that in that circumstance, there is a cry of your heart that can be met. If you walk as a son, if you understand his character and his promises, if you operate in gratitude and you don't have a constant desire for more and more and forget what's already been done, and you embrace adversity, allowing him to teach you something, and then it's like this beautiful, like, cycle, because then you come out from under the circumstance and you're more of a son. You have more understanding of his character. You cut it off yourself. You cut it off. It got quiet. You cut it off yourself. Stop blaming him. You cut it off yourself.
Yeah.
Because when you come under that or come under him in the midst of circumstance, it will shore up your sonship. It will bring more understanding of his character. You will literally live in his promise. Mm-hmm. You will learn something, and then it just makes you hungry for more. And when you're actually hungry, you won't have cravings. When you're actually hungry, you won't crave things.
Yeah.
Meaning you're fed.
Yeah.
I don't mean when you're like starving.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying.
Yes.
When you are hungry, you won't have cravings.
Yeah.
And when you eat, when you feed yourself properly, you're just, how does mom say it? It just makes you more hungry.
Yeah.
Like your metabolism, increases your metabolism.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the cycle. Sonship, understanding, gratitude, circumstance. Come under him, more sonship, more understanding, more gratitude. Because it's like the more that you experience, because that's what it produces experience, mm-hmm. relational experience. Mm-hmm. Because it is so entitled to say, I know how good he is, but to resist or rebel or push back every time there's an adverse circumstance and not allow him to be good.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, I feel like I understand why we're so entitled. Why I'm so entitled. Okay. I got nothing. That's it. That's all. Okay. That's it. So hopefully that was encouraging in the simplicity of what it looks like to, I mean, just walk out everything that he's, I just don't want this concept of like self, you know, sometimes when we have these like powerful words, we're still learning how to apply, right? We're still learning how to apply them. So I don't want things like self-satisfaction and everything that's been spoken to just lie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? Because these are transformational.
Yes. Yeah.
For us to understand what it means to grumble, mm-hmm. for us to understand the position that giving yourself over to a craving puts you in.
Yeah.
I mean, a content people will change everything. Like us being fully satisfied in him, that is how we are going to, how did Dad say it about how we're not just exiting systems, but we're overturning, right? If we do not learn how to be fully satisfied in him, we are not going to overturn a system.
Yeah.
Right? It's not possible because those systems are what we find satisfaction in.
Yeah.
So how can you overturn something? You're not going to want to.
Yeah.
You're going to get halfway through the wilderness and be like, I don't want to overturn that. I want to snuggle it. I want to, you know, like I want to like be intimate with it. I want to get cozy with it. I want to put that back over me. I don't want to overturn it. Because then I can never go back to it.
Yeah.
Now I'm done, I think.
Thank you, Megan. It's a lot to think about tonight. I feel like Megan helps us see the things that we don't see. We see it, but we don't like see it.
Yeah.
It's like when you look at, when you stand in front of a mirror and you look at a mirror, what do you see? You see yourself. You look at a mirror to see yourself, right? But what else do you see? The mirror. And what is it? You know what I mean? It's like we don't look at mirrors to look at the mirror and what it's made of and how it's hanging and like the actual thing itself. We look at it because we're looking to see one thing, which is ourselves, our reflection. Do I look okay? Do I look this way? You know what I mean? Like, but we never notice the mirror. We're looking right at it, but we don't like see it. But we do see it because we're using it to see ourselves. Anyway, I feel like that's kind of how Megan helped, at least for me, helps me like see the mirror. Just because I'm not paying attention to the mirror itself doesn't mean there's not a purpose and a reason it's there and something there to learn. Does that make sense? I'm trying my best to connect dots. It was super, super good. I was digging in this week to like carrying, you know, tithes and offerings, and I feel like Yahweh kind of did something with me too. Totally different. I'm really good at compartmentalizing, so he kind of broke some walls down for me today, which is kind of weird because I know we focus a lot on, I have at least been focusing a lot on, you know, our finances and what are we doing with them and how are we trusting Yahweh with them and all that. But I've compartmentalized, I think because, I think those who grew up in church, grew up in Christianity, we think about tithes and offerings. What is tithe? To 10%. How many times have we like talked about the 10%? 10% is his, right? So many scriptures talking about the 10%. It's tithe. There's plenty of studies on it. But it doesn't like talk about the 90%. Or it does. It really does. But we don't think about the 90%, even though that's the main portion of it. You know what I mean? But we're so focused on the tithe part that we're not really, and for me at least, I'm compartmentalizing the tithe as his, and that 90% is mine. It's exclusively mine. Right? So, well, that's kind of what I was raised to think. Right? 10% is his, the rest is mine. And so I was really thinking and digging in this week about the 90%. And that's kind of like the same thing. It's like the mirror. Like, we see the 10%, we know the 10%. It's right there. We go in to service with our paychecks thinking of the 10%. But then there's the 90% that we don't really hear much about. And so I started thinking about that. Because I was just kind of going through my notes today at work, and I feel like Yahweh was like, well, you got to take a bigger step back. Take a bigger step back. Like, it's more than what you're like preparing right now, and more simpler. And for me, it was like harder because I'm not having to think about that 90%. And he put it in a context for me of like, just because I'm not asking you for the 90% doesn't mean the 90% isn't mine either. You know what I mean? It's all his.
It's not ours. What I felt like he was telling me today was the 90% is a test. It's a test of your character. It's a test of your integrity. It's a test to see how you steward what I've given you. I only require a tenth of that. But it doesn't mean the rest of the 90% is yours. That's still mine too.
Yeah.
It's all mine. But I've compartmentalized that. No, that's mine. Because that's what I've been taught. So I started questioning, like, why do I give 10%? And, like, because that's what I've always done. That's just what I've always known. It's 10%. So, what helped me kind of get into that frame of mind of, okay, if the 90% is his too, then what does that look like? How do I make that like real in my life? And he was like, okay, here it is. He was like, pretend, and because he for me, he took the most important people that I honor, that I love, that I admire, mom and dad, in my life. He said, let's just say on Monday, mom and dad knock on your door, and they're like, you answer it, and they're like, Yahweh told me that we are going to be paying for your livelihood for the next year. Your mortgage, your groceries, everything. All of that we're going to be paying for the next year. It's coming out of our money. But we feel that Yahweh's pressing on us to bless you for the next year. Right? So then I'm like, okay. Would I spend differently then? He gives me his credit card and he says, this is for your groceries. This is for the ice cream you want to buy. This is for the clothes you want to buy. This is for the movies you want to rent. This is for your bills. You know, this is for your Netflix. That's a priority. You know what I mean? Like, everyone think about your budgets and think about your bills and what you're paying for. I know I've been talking about it for the last couple of weeks about, like, being intentional with how we're spending every dollar. But I have been thinking that because that 90% is mine, I'm supposed to be a good steward of my money. But it's not mine. If it's not mine, then I need to be a good steward of his money.
Yeah.
So then what if I'm paying everything with mom and dad's credit card and it's coming out of their finances, would I spend different? Would I prioritize different? Would I do things differently? And I think to myself, yeah, I would, because it's not my money. It's not mine. Like, I know what I would do with my money. It's what I'm doing every day. But if I knew every dollar, every time I swiped that credit card, it was coming from them, I would probably steward it better. I would probably think of it differently. Right? And that's how it is. Because I was thinking, 90% is basically him. It is in the Word. It is in the Torah. Every time he says everything's mine, that's that 90%. So now I have to start thinking outside of my compartmentalization of 10% and start thinking bigger. Is that making sense?
Yeah.
That's me, like, looking at the mirror. I see the mirror, but then I don't really see the mirror. So, anyway, just something to think about, some food for thought. It's not yours. It's not yours. Cool?
That thought definitely adds to the being a covenant community.
Yes, that was a question I had in my head. Was why am I struggling with that thought in my finances? Oh, because I think they're mine.
Yeah, so if the goal is to be such a united covenant community, then even finances being part of something submitted to that scale of being on the same page, even in that, is definitely food for thought. If we're after the what's on the outside, then that certainly is in our spending. But I just, even the thinking of grumbling being even on the outside, like the, I'm not using the right terms, but like being the outskirts, thank you, that 15% and how that turns into everything that she's speaking to tonight. Megan, we just so appreciate, and I was so looking forward to having your voice on this Torah portion in particular, because when you started to really like let it rip and you were like coming from a place, it just, did you guys feel that shift when she was starting to like let it, like there was something transpiring, not that there wasn't the whole time you were speaking, but it was like you gave you, it's like you stood in a place to equip us to be, that this is possible, which maybe that sounds silly, but like to be there where we are so satisfied in Him and that we can rejoice in all things, and the way you broke it down and then matched that with life experience, and when you started releasing in that place of, from that oil of being able to be taught in anything, like that was precious what you dispensed to us tonight, and costly. That in all life or death, in all situations, that we can be satisfied in Him, and how we have tendencies that we're so unaware of that get triggered in, well, I need to go spend maybe, or I need to go, I really need some chocolate tonight because it's been a long day. I told Him I need a big cookie. Like, apparently, that's one of my resorts of, oh my God, I need a big fat cookie. Versus, like, being to a place where we're so satisfied in Him that anything we are, like, sustaining our physical body or acting out in is just the overflow. It's just in addition. It's like you're engaging with Him instead of outside of Him. So it's, like, actually full. Versus being like a bottomless pit. And I just am so thankful that we had you tonight for this word and for what you equipped us in as a family, as such a representation of the elder brother in our house. To have you bring tonight just was really special. So as we're walking away, I just can't help but keep meditating on, like, am I aware of my tendencies in being satisfied in other things? Are we growing in that awareness on our day-to-day? Did we see that this week when Dad charged us to fast, maybe? Or like, when we gravitate towards certain things, depending on our circumstance, are we recognizing those patterns so that we can jump out of the cycle, right? So that we can actually start to walk in more sonship, to learn, to be grateful, to be able to embrace that adversity versus just giving in to the cookie. Not that cookies are bad. But I'm excited about just how much you equipped so that we can continue in that character refinement and be able to come to a place where that, like, living a life that's completely settled and satiated is certainly leaving a system. and being able to like grow and learn in everything is such a desire of our heart. So thank you for tonight, and thank you for releasing over us and in all that you taught into.
Thank you for listening to this message from Kingdom Heirs International. If you have received insight and revelation with this message, we invite you to claim that revelation by trading on the trading floor with this ministry. You can do that at kingdomheirsflag.org. Thank you.